Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 3, Episode 16. We're heading into the Jets weekend. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet. And I'm David Todd of ESPN in Pittsburgh. You can hear me daily, 2 to 4 p.m. this weekend. You can hear me from 2 to 4:30 as well, talking college football on Saturday. And on Sunday, you can hear me from 12 to 2:25 on ESPN. Having a tailgate talk, the pre-Steelers show. Dave, how you feeling down there? I know you've been having some migraine-type headaches.
I wish they were migraines. They're called cluster headaches. Anybody out there want to do some research, just go to, and normally I wouldn't point people to Wikipedia, but the actual page on Wikipedia for cluster headaches is right on. I was out of season for 7 years, and now they're back. So, go have a look at that and tell me what you think about that and why I'm so testy on Twitter these days.
All right. But you're going to see the doctor today, and I know you like doctors. That's going to cure all your ills.
Yeah, exactly. He's not gonna let me get my shock treatment still. So you know, I'll probably be offering one of our listeners $100 to come hook a car battery up to me, more than possibly.
Where are they going to hook it? What part of the body?
I'm open. It's crazy, man. When you throw that on top of my other issues that I have, man, I'm a walking mess right now.
All right.
But at least we got Steelers football to look forward to.
We had some walking messes last night with Jay Cutler. He was about to be a non-walking mess.
Holy moly. I tweeted out on Twitter during that game, "Be your parents, please don't let your children be watching this game. And and if they are, please sit down and have a talk with them afterwards." That was some ugly football right there. The Bears can't protect Jay Cutler. Jay Cutler looked like he was never in that game to start with. It looked like he was just going through the motions there. Made a lot of throws there, kind of off the back foot, and throwing into some double coverages that I thought never should have done. Now, granted, you know, his line play wasn't great, but they never adjusted to any of that, to some quick releases or quick two or three step drops and get the ball out. Brandon Marshall's sort of like a guy like Santonio Holmes or Plaxico Burris. You know, if you don't get the ball, get him involved in the offense early on, you're going to lose him. And that's what happened. You saw when he finally got open in the back corner of that end zone when Tremont Williams fell down on the play, he dropped the ball that was right in the hands there. So the Bears have some issues this year and offensively, and you know they're going to be hit and miss as far as putting up big points, and then you're going to see clunkers like you saw last night against the Packers.
Yep, and we'll get into our Steeler coverage, but I just point out that the Steelers would like the game on Sunday to go just like that game last night. Jay Cutler and Mark Sanchez. Jay Cutler's got a bigger arm. He's probably a little better quarterback, but not by a big margin. And Cutler's maybe a little more careless with the football. But the whole point is, if you give a quarterback in the NFL, most quarterbacks in the NFL, a clean pocket and time to throw, they're going to deliver the ball on time into the right location. And you saw what happened with Cutler. He's a bit of a gunslinger. He'll take risks. And the Steelers want to do exactly the same with Mark Sanchez. He was able to stand up in that Buffalo game. I think he got knocked down one time. And that Jets offensive line played great, but I don't think they're that good. And if the Steelers, we'll see what kind of pressure they can get. But if they can get that kind of pressure on Mark Sanchez, they'll be laughing. They will be laughing, and they'll win this game easily.
Yeah, even if they could get half the pressure that the Packers.
Did Clay Matthews win the defensive player of the year?
No kid. I think he's going to the Pro Bowl today, you know, after that game. And speaking of which, Clay Matthews, what a beast that guy is. Reminds you of a younger James Harrison, doesn't it? Call it kind of smaller in stature and just a powerful beast, man. He was double teamed a few of those times and fought through those double teams to get those sacks. And you know, I make the reference to a kind of a young, younger James Harrison kind of segueing into the injury report here. James Harrison, I don't think is going to go again this week, David. Mike Tomlin said on Tuesday that he was going to run on Wednesday, that they were going to ramp up his activity later portions of the week to see how the knee responds and all like that. He hasn't practiced in 2 days. If he works today, I really would be surprised. Something's not right with that knee. And, I had had some word about that before even Harrison had got the minor procedure done on his knee, that, you know, there was probably more than just a little bone spur behind the kneecap there, that, Harrison was bothered, making some trips around the country prior to OTAs and all like that, worried about this knee. I think there's more to it now than all that we've seen thus far. I would be surprised if he suits up Sunday against the Jets. And, you have to worry about the next couple of weeks with him now being what about he's fully a month now removed from the procedure to back at training camp there. So, it's not good news with him not practicing.
Well, I'm going to just take generally the other side. And I saw Mark Capaldi tweeted about saying, something's wrong because this guy had spinal surgery and recovered and orbital surgery and recovered and looked at different injuries. I mean, different things take different times. And he was obviously able to recover from the other stuff quickly. I'll just say again, like we talked about last week, the surgery, as you pointed out, was August 15th. That date's not moving. So it's still 30 days ago. And generally when you have surgery, even the most minor of surgeries, kind of 4 weeks is a minimum amount of time. So, look, if he doesn't go the next 2 weeks, I'll reevaluate. But it does, we knew he was going to be iffy for game one. The fact that he's iffy for game two doesn't mean to me that this guy's not going to play the rest of the year. I heard both Mark Madden and Jerry Dulac say yesterday that they wouldn't be surprised if Harrison's out for the year. And I just think it's just such a stretch to, we don't have any idea. They said he had this procedure. And so unless somebody's lying, if that's the procedure he had, it should be kind of around the next week or two when he's back. And obviously they think he's kind of close because they've been doing stuff. They've had him do some work. So now it doesn't mean he can't have a setback and something else can't go wrong, for sure. But from the information we have, it shouldn't be that far from this date that he's about ready to go.
Yeah, but as you know, we don't know, and hopefully he's, Friday he'll talk to the reporters Friday concerning his knee. And, it's going to be the same old thing. Is there any swelling, any fluid buildup in the knee? That's been the concern. Now, he says there's still irritation in there, and that's the big thing that bothers me with that, is that there's still irritation in that knee. I can understand it being sore from a fact of just, not using it and all, but the word irritation in the knee, at 3 weeks, 4 weeks after having that procedure done, is what gets me. And I'm going to keep going back, and I hate using the word microfracture here, David, but, and until he hits the field and starts playing again, that's going to be my concern as far as that goes with that knee. Now, could there, if there was another irritation in there, I think they would have found it in there if indeed it was just a bone spur behind the kneecap early on. But like I said, I had a source, and this was before even heading into the procedure with the bone spur here, that told me that he is very, very worried about that knee and had flown all over the country to kind of have this thing looked at and all prior to even training camp and all getting underway. So I think there's...
Did you stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night?
No. I this is a reliable source, too. I mean, I'm not just throwing this out there, and I don't just throw out that use of that, but I'm not allowed...
That's pre-surgery, right?
That was pre-surgery, David. He told me this 2 weeks prior to Harrison having the surgery, and... then it was then the 2 weeks come and Harrison had the surgery. or procedure done on his knee, which he did not tell me was going to be the bone spur or anything like that behind the kneecap. But, you know, this is a reliable source that told me that the guy was is very worried about the shape of the knee. So take that.
I mean, I don't doubt
and,
any
and,
of that.
And I don't throw that around. I'm not one to throw. I don't have many sources as it is, but I do have some that are close to the team.
And I'm not arguing any of that. I'm just saying that's pre-surgery, so that's more than 30 days ago. So, you know, a lot has changed since then. He has had surgery since then.
Sure.
So
absolutely. I mean, yeah.
Hopefully we'll get some more information today, and it'll be interesting. I'm actually kind of interested to see. I would probably put the odds of him practicing today. Again, we're just now we're just pie in the sky stuff. But I actually put him at about 15-20%. I don't think he's going to practice today, and I don't think he's going to play this weekend. What's going to be really interesting if he does practice today, that'll be really interesting because, A, that means he's really trying to get on the field for the game Sunday, and they think they're making progress. Now, I'm with you. I don't think he's going this week, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's you know, if it's another week, and then he gets 3 weeks off, and maybe everything's great, maybe it's not. But I think today will be an interesting day. Dave, the two other things that came out of yesterday's – one was Rashard Mendenhall supposedly looks really good. I had Dale Lawley on the show yesterday who was at practice, and he said it's really surprising. He said they're alternating the three backs in there with the first team, and he said he looks faster than the other two guys. He's cutting just as well as the other guys. And he said, I don't necessarily expect him to play this week because he hasn't had a lot of hitting, but he said he looks good.
And Tunch Ilkin said the same thing yesterday on Steelers Live at Four show there. He said, boy, this guy really, really looks good right now. So, you know, that's two people saying that now. So I'm with you. I don't think Mendenhall plays just yet. I still think that the target date is after the bye week. You know, why not give him the rest if you can? You know,
it's a question. Does he need it? If he's healthy to go, he's healthy like Adrian Peterson last week. He's good to go and he can contribute. Put him back and he's good to go.
One thing I noticed about Adrian Peterson, he early in that game, he had that hop first, that hop that tells you he's not kind of trusting that knee. But as the game went on, he was cutting on it. And, you know, it's like we've said all along, the mental aspect of coming over this injury and trusting that knee is the biggest thing, more so than than a repaired injury itself. It's trusting that knee on cutting and all. So, you know, maybe they just want to give him more from that angle as far as, you know, him trusting the knee and not hopping on it as much as opposed to cutting it. But, yeah, I mean, if the guy's healthy and can play, you play him. I mean, that's obvious here. But I still think after the bye week is the ideal situation there. But, you know, we'll see today. He didn't work. Even though he practiced fully all last week, he himself said on Friday he really didn't do much. So they might follow that same protocol this week as far as just kind of giving the other backs the lion's share of the carry on Friday. And let him kind of be, have kind of a half day off on Friday moving into the weekend, especially if he's not going to play. Troy Polamalu is the one, though, that I think is some concern here, especially to hear Dick LeBeau talk yesterday about it. And Dick kind of volunteered the information, which I found kind of weird. Either this is Dick, which normally he's not one to play games when he talks injury here. Or he just kind of let it slip out. He was asked about how much James Harrison means to the defense, and he's rattling off how James Harrison is the player of the year a few years ago, so you know he's a great player. And then he volunteered. He says, "But we've had to play without him and Troy Polamalu." He volunteered out there, and then he says. He goes on later. They ask him specifically about Polamalu, and then he kind of backtracked and says, "I don't know. You'll have to ask Coach Tomlin and the training staff about that." But he says Troy's had these types of injuries before, and sometimes he makes it, sometimes he doesn't. He says, "I don't think it's a real serious thing. I think it'll be a short time injury, but I suppose that anybody that's not practicing, you better get ready." For them not to play. Now, Tomlin said on Tuesday, be prepared at the beginning of the week for Troy to be, you know, limited or not practicing. Thursday, you kind of expect Troy at least to be limited there, but he's listed as a DNP, did not practice. Today is the key day with Troy. Troy does not go today. it's going to be hard to see him suiting up in this game Sunday against the Jets.
Yeah, and I, you know, there were a couple of interesting things about that. I guess this was an injury that maybe he had a little bit of before the Denver game, or if it wasn't exacerbated, you know, he was playing at some point in the Denver game with a bit of an injury, obviously. And you wonder how much that impacted how he was lining up and what he was doing. I think a lot, I and a lot of people, and you, Dave, said we didn't see the explosiveness, particularly in the second half. The Broncos were doing stuff. You just wonder, you know, we're not going to know the answer, but now it does make you wonder, was he limited in that second half in terms of what he was doing?
Well, you know, he's had over the last few years that ankle, heel, Achilles, concussion.
Hamstring.
I don't remember the hamstring so much, but I know on that one lower leg there that he's had tons of issues. If you remember that one diving touchdown return against the Bengals there on the interception there, I think that aggravated things pretty bad when he did that. So I'm not sure if it's the same leg or not. I think it is. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a concern here in this game. If he doesn't go today, I would expect him to be down. I would expect Ryan Monday to get the start, alongside Ryan Clark. And this would make two games in a row. You haven't had your starting safeties together and on the field together there. So, I don't want to speculate too far out, because we've seen Troy miss Wednesday and Thursday before. And then he shows up on Friday, and then it's good to go by game time. So later on today, when the injury report's out, we'll have a better idea of what's going to happen with him.
Yeah, exactly. And
the Jets are going to be in trouble too, eh?
Jets got a big issue, man. They got a big issue. Darrell Revis didn't go yesterday, and he's now he is now questionable.
He might even be doubtful by the time the day ends.
Yeah, it is. The big thing here is this is now goes into the hands of the league. It's out of the hands of the Jets. They have a league-appointed neurologist who will now make the decision when Revis is good to go. My honest-to-God answer is I'd be shocked if he gets cleared in these 3 days. If he wasn't cleared to practice Thursday. Now, what I want to know is what the league policy is, because, I mean, is Revis going to be tapping the doctor on the shoulder every hour from Sunday at 8 a.m. till 4 p.m. saying, let's test me again. You know, I don't know if you're not cleared 24 hours before the game, are you then ruled out, which I would think would be the right policy. So it's not kind of a game time decision. You make that decision 24 hours in advance and you stick to it. That's my guess, but we'll try to find out more about that. But you know, that's a huge loss. Now they've got Kyle Wilson. Is that his name? The DB from Boise State. He can step in at that corner, but that really kind of exposes then their nickel corner if he has to step up and take Revis's spot.
Yeah, and that's where it would hurt the most, is in their sub package situation. Now, granted, Kyle Wilson is not Darrell Revis by any stretch of the imagination, but he is a good young corner, in my opinion. I think he's capable. Now, as far as Revis goes, I think Rex Ryan said that he wants to make the decision before they leave for Pittsburgh on Saturday. So if Revis does not go today.
Oh, yeah. So there you go. That's it. He said he wouldn't travel the team. You're right. So we're going to know tomorrow.
Yeah, if he's on that plane, and those New York reporters are pretty good about letting about getting the information out there about who's traveling and who's not traveling or whatnot. So, they it makes sense not to put a concussed player, a guy that's still having headache issues or symptoms of a concussion, on an airplane. I mean, so, you know, if he travels to Pittsburgh, you have to think that this kid's going to play in this game. So we should have a definitive answer. If not by today on the injury report, how he's listed later on today, by tomorrow at the very latest. If he shows up questionable on the injury report today, that means he probably had to practice at least on a limited basis, I would think, because you can't play games on that injury report if he doesn't practice any day this week and list him as questionable. As far as that goes. So look for that later this afternoon. They've also got another injury on there too. Dustin Keller, their tight end, may or may not have had went backwards with his hamstring. He's still not 100%, but he felt okay, according to the New York Post here. So it's going to be a key day for him today too, as far as practice goes with him. So that would be a huge loss. You have their tight end and their starting cornerback out. Now they're dinged up in certain other areas, but LaRon Landry is supposed to be able to go. Their outside linebacker, Brian Thomas, is supposed to go. None of the other injuries are supposed to be major except for one of the guards who they've already ruled out there.
Right. Okay. So that brings us that gives us a general sense of where we are injury-wise. Obviously, again, you can follow Dave on Steelers Depot to get that later today, or you can hear it on my show. We'll have that probably comes out toward the end of the show. Actually, they practiced this morning. That come out a little earlier today than it has the rest of the week. We may know that by 2 o'clock or so. So we'll get that up there when we can. Dave, the game. We talked to Mike Vaccaro and appreciate him being on with us on Wednesday to give us the Jets perspective. I said at the top of the show, this game is about getting pressure. And on my show this week, I've been talking all week about which is the better side of the ball for the Steelers now, the offense or the defense. And, you know, that's an interesting conversation. We can talk about it. But for the Jets, it's very clear. I don't care what they did against the Bills. Yeah, they had a really nice offensive game. But their strength lies on the defensive side of the ball. They've got two really good corners. They got a big hitting safety in Landry. Now, I'm not as impressed with their front seven as some people are. But what are your thoughts on that side of the ball for the Jets, and where do you think the Steelers can maybe make some hay?
I think they can run the ball against this team, against the Jets front seven, to be honest with you. And I think they can go right up the gut with it as well, too. And listen, I kind of posted about this morning, you know, we had a lot of talk about the formations and the personnel that are in particularly that the Steelers used in the game against the Broncos. I think you need to get yourself into some situations with running some 21 personnel, with running some 22 personnel, to kind of force these cornerbacks to play the run more in this game, especially if they're without Darrell Revis in this game, because I think that's what you want. I think you want your safeties having to come up and help. I think you want your cornerbacks, if they're not going to help against the run, I think you want them turning their backs and running and trying to run with the Steelers' wide receivers. So, if I'm the Steelers, I want to attack them with some run formations that I can pass out of as well, too. Now, when this is all said and done and we look back at this game from a personnel grouping standpoint, I still think the Steelers' 11 personnel grouping, which is their three wide receiver grouping, is going to be the lion's share here. But I don't expect it to be the 72-73% worth of plays like it was against the Broncos here. I think if you run a lot of 21 and 22 personnel here, get them to come up and start playing this run, and if you're able to run out of 11 personnel, something that they weren't able to do or didn't really try to do against the Broncos. Usually when they had three wide receivers out there against the Broncos last week, they were passing. You cannot get in the habit of doing that. You're going to become very predictable every time you send three wide receivers out on the field. So I think you can run at the interior of the Jets' defensive line, at their linebackers. And if you're able to do that early in the game, I think it can open up this game wide open for tight end Heath Miller and for the guys outside, Mike Wallace and Antonio Brown, especially if Darrell Revis does not play in this game.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. I'd like to think the Steelers can run the ball. That is one of the crucial matchups here. What are the Steelers going to do offensive line wise? Everybody's healthy now. They should have the same starting five they had last week. Gilbert hasn't even been listed on the injured list with injury report with that hyperextended knee. Ramon Foster hasn't missed any time, so shouldn't be a health issue. We were a little surprised to see Jonathan Dwyer not practice on Wednesday, but he was a full go yesterday. And as I said, all three backs are getting time. So, it'll be interesting to see who starts, first of all, Dave. But you had the personnel groupings up and the plays. I was surprised that it had turned out that Dwyer got 42 snaps to just 24 for Redmond.
Yeah, and Dwyer earned those extra carries in that game as well, too. And Redmond's not on the injury report this week with that ankle. So You know, they're evidently he's 100% here. So, I don't see how you don't let Dwyer start this game. Really, I mean, I think he has earned it with the play. We talked about it the other day. He has earned it in the preseason. He earned it in that game last week. So why not let him start this game? Of course, you'll use Rainey and Batch. Probably on third downs. I mean, let's face it, you don't want Dwyer out there 60 plays a game, and you're not going to see that. In my opinion, but I think you can. I think you can spell Dwyer with Redmond like every two series there. I think you can use your combination of Rainey and Batch as your third down backs in this game. And listen, you know, talking about matchups here, Jeremiah Bell and LaRon Landry, they're not impressive safeties. Everybody wants to talk about LaRon Landry. This guy has been nothing but mouth, in my opinion, his entire time in the league, and you know, he's not good at coming up and helping a run. You keep going back to a few years ago in that game against, who was it, the Giants, I think, that Brandon Jacobs just trucked him. I mean, just ran over him, the way that Adrian Peterson put a foot in the chest of William Gay several years ago in that game. You want to pick your spots at testing over the top on these corners and these safeties, especially if they're going to play a two deep shell against the Steelers, which I don't think they're going to be able to do all day. I think they're going to have to cheat up their secondary at times in this game, and I think they're going to only be able to play a one deep safety. In LaRon Landry here, you know, I think they'll cheat Jeremiah Bell up to help with this run. I think these cornerbacks are going to have to play the run if things go right. In the Steelers' favor here with running the ball early. And I think that's a great, great way to attack this Jets defense and how you beat them.
It'll be interesting to see at that safety. So do you think they're stronger, their front seven stronger, or their back four is stronger?
I really don't think they're a strong – I think they're stronger up front, to be honest with you, on their line. Muhammad Wilkerson, I think, is a guy that's kind of underrated at left end there.
Yep.
First
round pick out of Temple. He's he has flown a little bit under the radar, and I think DeVito's not a terrible player either.
Right. And Quentin Coples, of course. I think this is a guy that's going to be fine for them eventually. Kendrick Ellis, I think, is fine up front. I personally think their front's fine. But I think the Steelers, you know, where it comes into play, especially on the run, is the play of their linebackers. And Bart Scott is not the same player that he once was, in my opinion. You know, in fact, I think he was the worst player on their defense. But going back and watching that game against the Bills last week, I literally think he was the biggest liability of theirs against the run last week, and I think that's the area that you want to exploit here. I think you want to make him read and come up and play this run and get in the holes. And I think if you can get a player like Willie Colon or Marquise Pouncey out to the second level and on him, I think the Steelers can really stay ahead of the chains in this game, something they did not do against the Denver Broncos. And if they're able to stay ahead of the chains, and Todd Haley's able to stay in some 21 or 22 personnel, look out. The Steelers could put 40 points on the Jets, and I just don't throw that out there like that. I literally really, really do like this matchup, especially if Darrell Revis does not play in this game.
Okay, let's flip to the other side of the ball and look at the Steelers defensively against this Jets offense. We've talked about the offensive line. The receiver, Stephen Hill, is the second-round pick out of Georgia Tech, along with Santonio. Jeremy Curley had a decent game last week, but he's a guy nobody's ever heard of. And then you go to Chaz Schillens and Clyde Gates, and Gates will step up if Curley is at a back injury. If he's not able to go, the wide receiver out of TCU, then Gates would step up and be the slot guy. But it's not, you know, nobody's ever heard of these guys. And, you know, Hill you've heard of because he was a high draft pick, but the other three guys, even though they did some good stuff last week. It's a nondescript group. In the backfield, you got Sean Green, who people know of out of Iowa, and he did his damage in the Big Ten. So if you watched Penn State and Big Ten football, you know he's a hard runner, but he's not a shifty runner. Joe McKnight out of USC is a guy who was one of the most touted high school running backs in the country when he came out. He was supposed to be the flash at USC, never really kind of lived up to the billing that maybe being the next Reggie Bush type player. In the NFL, he's never quite lived up to it. He didn't go as high as some thought. He slipped to the fourth round in 2010. He's been a dangerous kick returner, and he does have some speed. But it's a running game that's really going to go with Sean Green and then John Connor. They'll play a fair bit of fullback in their schemes. And Connor, even though he's a little dinged up, he is a true fullback in the truest sense of the word.
Yeah, they don't call him a Terminator for nothing.
Became the darling of what's the HBO show Hard Knocks. Everybody loved John Connor.
Absolutely, and this breaks down pretty simple for me on defense this week for the Steelers and matching up against the Jets. And people aren't going to like this. And people, boy, to hear some people talk about Dick LeBeau right now, it's just so funny. But look, the game plan against the Broncos was. Make Peyton beat you up underneath there. Don't give up the big play up over the top. Now, they only gave up a couple of explosive plays in that game. One of them was a one-yard pass that was taken 71 yards for that to the house. They had no problem with playing cover three coverage against Peyton Manning and giving up the levels, playing a three over, four under type situation there. And Peyton Manning took it. And you knew he would, but that's the only way that you can play Peyton Manning, in my opinion. But on the flip side, you have to get pressure on Peyton Manning, or you're going to have happen what happened last week, especially when they get into a no-huddle situation. That game behind us now, expect the Steelers to run. You know, you heard Brandon Stokely say, oh, they were predictable on defense and all like that. Yeah, because, I mean, it works for the Steelers generally. You let them have the catch up underneath. You tackle the catch. You don't give up the explosive play. You hold them to seven. You hold your opposition to 17 or 20 points, and your offense puts up 24 to 30, and you win the ball game. That's going to be the same thing this week, except you're not playing Peyton Manning. You're playing Mark Sanchez. They are going to mix up their coverages only slightly here. They're going to play a lot of cover three. It's not going to be a lot of secret what they're going to do. They're going to try to bring the blitz more at times here, possibly early at the game in an attempt to rattle Mark Sanchez. But I don't see much being changed here on defense. And I know people are aggravated and say, well, Dick LeBeau doesn't adjust and Dick LeBeau doesn't do this. Well, hey, it wins against subpar quarterbacks. We have seen this year in, year out.
And that's the key, Dave. Say that again, because that's the key. Look, I do think there's some criticism to be made against the Steelers defense when they've been playing the elite quarterbacks, but that's also why they're elite quarterbacks. They can pretty much pick apart every defense. What the Steelers are able to do is just what you say. They have killed every subpar quarterback over the last 5, 7, 10 years. Pick your time frame.
And exactly. Now, the one thing that maybe LeBeau should have done more against Denver is more of maybe the big nickel or the dime type stuff. But remember, we didn't have Ryan Clark in that ball game either, okay? They should have attacked the Broncos the more in the way that they attacked the New England Patriots last year. Let me tell you, there will be defensive changes next time. Hopefully they face Peyton Manning, and maybe we'll see more of a dime, more of a big nickel type situation there with four defensive backs possibly on the field against Peyton Manning. But still, you had to protect against that run at the same time. You can't do both at the same time. The criticism, okay, against the better quarterbacks, but hey, those better quarterbacks are paid to do that, and we forget that the other team is paid to play too. But with the someone like the Sanchez, with the Ryan Fitzpatricks, with the Carson Palmers of the world, you make those people read where the blitz is coming from, where the guy is dropping in coverage. You make him be a film study nerd. And you can study film all you want. If you don't understand what you're watching, it does you no good. Peyton Manning understands what he's watching. I'm not so sure Mark Sanchez does. If you do not give them the ability to go one-on-one outside like the Bills did last week with Stephen Hill, with Curley, I think, even Santonio got singled up. They're going to let those guys run underneath all day, especially with the, even if Dustin Keller plays the tight end for them. But as long as they tackle the catch, if they don't give up explosive plays, they're betting that Mark Sanchez is not going to be able to drive the ball for 13 or 14 plays.
And that, you know, I think that's exactly right. I think that's what they should do. And so we'll see. Now, Steelers defensively, the personnel questions are, I would think that it wouldn't be Will Allen getting the start. If Troy didn't go, do you think they'd go Monday and Ryan Clark back there?
Absolutely. It'll be Monday and Ryan Clark. The strong safety and a free safety position in the Steelers 3-4. We've heard Dick LeBeau and both Paul Amon and Ryan Clark talk about this in the past. It can be an interchangeable position with what they want with what they do. Now, will you get the freelancing as much from Paul Amalo, that you would normally get with Paul Amalo in this game? No, but in this game, you don't necessarily have to have that anyway, in my opinion. You don't need a Paul Amalo guessing or going up there and freelancing as much. You just need to call it if Ryan Mundy's going to be your strong safety in this game, if his call is to rotate down down deep, then that's his call to do that. And then it's up to the quarterback to make the read and make the play after that. You're not going to see any of the cat and mouse stuff, but yeah, Ryan Mundy will be your guy opposite Ryan Clark in this game. You just won't have, as I said, the freelance type stuff that Troy Polamalu does in this game. And to be honest with you, despite, the game that Ryan Mundy has had the last two games, against the Broncos specifically, they weren't his best of games. Listen, that touchdown that he gave up last week, he was picked off on that one play to who was it? Tammy, I think. There's no way he's going to get there on that play there. Ryan Mundy is not a premier strong safety or free safety in this league, but I like his chances with what the Steelers are going to do in this game if he is to replace Paul Amalo.
Right. So, okay. But just attacking, the Steeler defense. Then the other question on the positional stuff would be, I didn't actually see the snaps for the linebackers. Do you know what the snaps were for Chris Carter versus Jason Worlds?
Yes. And we have that coming up. Hold on just a minute here and I'll get you those. We have those coming up on site today with our defensive participation report. I'll get those to you.
So the
Here you go. Chris Carter, 46 snaps. Now these include the penalty snaps, so you have to take a few out of here. 46 for Chris Carter, Jason Worlds, 23. So 46 and 23, 2-1. As far as snaps are, and that's not surprising. I think you're going to see World snaps increase. Here's the thing, though, is we did see Worlds replace Lamar Woodley a few times in this game when he came in. So, while they ramp Worlds up conditioning level, I don't think it matters who runs out of the tunnel in this game, who starts at right outside linebacker. I think you'll see perhaps both of those, Chris Carter and Worlds, get time over there.
I think that's right, and it'll be interesting to see. What kind of rotation they use on the D line. How many snaps did Al Woods get? Do you have that there?
Eight.
I got to say, I was a little surprised. I saw him early.
He had a current quarterback hurry in there too, but it's so weird to see him finally on the field in regular season and on that left side, because during preseason, we saw him mostly on the right side when he played opposite Corbin Bryant. Now, of course, they would switch over to the strong side or weak side depending on the formation at times, though. But it is weird to see Al Woods out there. But it's also positive, too, that, now they have enough confidence in him to work him into that rotation there. And they had to do it against Peyton Manning on those drives in that thin air, when they're running at no huddle there. Now, will we see Al Woods – any in this game against the Jets. I think the only way you see him get approach 8 or 10 snaps in this game is if the Jets are able to move the ball via no huddle.
Yeah, I think there's that, and the, let's just say, hopefully Alwes doesn't get 8 or 10 snaps because that means things are going well.
Absolutely.
Special teams, Dave. The Jets, a little bit of an interesting situation for the Jets in terms of who they've got. Their punter is a guy named Robert Malone, who's been he's been in the league just his second year in the league, and if I remember correctly, I think he was in San Diego's camp all preseason. They cut him in September, and the Jets picked him up, but he's already been through camps or team history with Jacksonville, Tampa Bay, Detroit, and San Diego. So I can't tell you a lot about this guy other than he's 20, whatever he is, 4 years old, and he's from Fresno State. So he's unfamiliar to me. Nick Folk is a different guy. He's a guy we are familiar with. He's been around the league a little bit, was with San Francisco for a bit, was with Dallas, if I remember correctly, and was waived in, was with Dallas, not San Francisco, waived in 09, and the Jets have picked him up, and he's been around for a couple of years. And they had that kicker, didn't they have injuries, and then who was their kicker in the prior to Folk?
I'm drawing a blank here on who it was.
Did they have the Irish guy, or was that in Kansas City?
I don't remember. I'm not up on my punters. I don't watch much as far as that goes. So yeah, I'm drawing a blank.
They're special teams guys. This is we're not going to give the Steelers a lot of wins here in special teams in terms of the specialists, because as much as I like Sushi, he had a really good time with the Steelers 2 years ago. He was on the bottom of the kicking percentage last year. He drilled 2 in Denver, looked good. Everything he's done through the preseason and the first game of the season looks good. I'm strongly in his camp, but probably more than most. And we'll just, the book is open on Drew Butler. He's playing his second NFL game, so we'll see. So we'll call that a wash. In terms of their return guys, Joe McKnight is a dangerous kick returner, really dangerous. He was averaging 40 a kick return up until almost the very end of the season last year. Curley is a punt returner. Can't tell you a lot about him. I do know he took one back last week. They have Kyle Wilson, who'll be the backup. And Antonio Cromartie can be back there in some situations. They use him a little bit the way the Steelers have used Santonio Holmes in the past, where you need a big return, you go with Cromartie. So they've got some dangerous guys in that respect. So again, maybe a small edge to the Jets. We'll call it a draw. We haven't seen what our return and coverage units really look like with that through that first game in Denver.
Yeah, and Chris Rainey came out this week and was asked about not getting the punt returns in the game against Denver. There, why do you reason that is? Do you think this is Tomlin just saying, "Hey, Rook, just to let you know, nothing's handed to you here"?
I don't know if it was nothing's handed to you. It was just Tomlin being nervous. I really do. I was surprised, but like I said, I'm fine if it's Antonio Brown. The guy's a Pro Bowl guy back there, so maybe Chris Rainey's feelings are hurt, and maybe you shouldn't have told him he was first on the depth chart and then pulled him. But it's the NFL; it's a big boy league. It's not like they put out, they didn't put out Brandon Stokely to fair catch it. They put out a guy who's really dangerous. So we'll see what happens. I was surprised, and I'm not. I think the guys wrote it up to make controversy out of it. Allen Robinson's like, he blames it on Amos Wilson. Well. Or Amos Jones, it is what it is. They went with a Pro Bowler. But I think Rainey will get some chances this week.
I do, too. I think, in fact, I think he'll get more than I think he'll be out there all the time. And, two, I wrote about this yesterday, kind of tagging off of Allen Robinson's piece there, is that, let's remember, both Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders both got dinged up on the coconut last week. So, let's eliminate the car crashes with him for 1 week here, So, I think you will see Rainey out there. You know what, David? I think he's got so much motivation after being held out, not being able to return the punts last week. I predict I'm going to go out and that's all you're doing with special teams for the most part. I mean, you don't know. Really, it's hard to predict and kind of scout that type stuff out there. But I think he does break one in this game. I'm not going to say he's going to take one to the house, but I think he bust one of about 50 yards in this game, and I think it becomes a huge turning point in this game. The kid is that good. I think you have to work on a way, as I wrote about formations again this morning, I think you have to devise a way to get the ball in his hands, six, seven, eight times a game. If possible, and if punt returns is included as one or two times as being that, then so be it. But I think this guy is a playmaker, and I'm with you. I think he gets all the punt return duties. I don't like the idea. I think on that one kick return against Denver, he had one foot back there on the back line trying to take one out there. Hey, if you're 4 yards deep or 5 yards deep, just take a knee on the kickoff return. There's no sense trying to bring that back, in my opinion, there. But everything else, go after it.
I'm with you on the whole of that. All right. Well, that's a good recap. If you missed our show on Wednesday, go listen to that. Mike Vaccaro does some really good work. And if you just want more Steelers talk, of course, you can hear me this afternoon. I'll have Bob Blobber from Newsday, who does some really great work as well, getting the perspective on the Jets. So, all right, Dave, we got this one covered. Let's go to our picks. And I think you really beat the stuffing out of me last week. And as you said, it's not so important. It's more important to beat the stuffing out of the man. But I think you got me. I know there are three games at least that we differed on that you got and I didn't, starting with the Steeler game. Do you have the final tally?
I don't, David. I should have pulled that up before. I will have the running recap, though, in my post-Sunday that has both my picks and your picks in there. I'll have the totals from week one up there, and we'll also have the picks that we make right now up there. But I think I did get you by a couple of games or so. But for entertainment purposes only, of course, I was after the man.
The
man got me last night too. Just so everybody knows, David had the Packers laying 5.5 last night, and I had the Bears taking the points last week. So David is up 1-0 over me heading into this weekend.
I got to tell you, when things play out the way you think they're going to play out, you feel so smart, honestly. I mean, that game, and I was on the Packers about 9 different ways, and everything was, perfect. And, all you need is to just feel good about yourself for about 8 seconds, and you're going to get cut off at the knees. So, without further ado, let's take a look at this week's games and go through our thoughts. And while we're doing this, maybe I'll try and quickly tally up what happened last week when I know you took it to me. So first game, we'll just go down the board. This line has moved just a touch here. It's Tampa at the Giants. And I imagine I'm a little surprised the line moved down. I'd seen it at 7.5 earlier in the week. It's at 7. Giants fans are going to love this line. Again, it's hard to get reads on teams when you have turnover, you have a coaching change. Shiano, I was very impressed and surprised that they took it to Carolina at home last week. The Giants, they lost the game. I think they're going to be coming out just like the Packers did last night. This is an important game. I don't expect them to lose, and in fact, I don't really expect it to be close. I see the Giants covering this easy, so I'll take the world champs on this one.
What are you showing, 7?
7.
Yeah, I'm showing 7, too. Take the Giants, lay to 7.
All right. New England's at home and just under 2 full snackers at 13.5 against Arizona, and we're not quite sure, as usual, who's playing quarterback for Arizona.
Wow, this is a big line in the NFL, man. What are you showing point-wise, 14?
13.5.
Golly. Yeah, give me the Patriots late at 13.5.
All right, I'm with you there as well.
That's a lot of points, though.
We saw a different New England team run the ball last week. We'll see what they did. A game that, it's hard. It's hard this early in the season to find games that you could care less about. And Andrew Luck is playing, so there is some interest there. Indianapolis is a home dog, and we have like 6 of them this week. Minnesota hosting Indianapolis, Indianapolis hosting Minnesota with the new and improved version of Adrian Peterson, ? Minnesota's laying 1.5 on the road. Dave, I'm going to take them. I think Ponder can do enough in this game.
I'm going to go the other side. I think Andrew Luck made his mistakes, but I think he's a good fit with what Bruce Arians is doing there. They had a lot of explosive plays in that game. I think the question is, can the Colts defense stop the Minnesota offense? And I think the answer is yes there. I think they're good enough to at least slow them down. So I'll take the home dog here, Indianapolis, and plus the 1.5.
and Andrew Luck getting his first career win. A game of the one of the more entertaining conference divisions, and one that I'm going to be really enjoy watching this year, is the NFC South. I think all four teams bring something interesting to the table. Carolina's playing New Orleans at home. New Orleans didn't look good last week, but we know they can put up points. Carolina didn't look good last week, and we think they can put up points. Carolina, another live home dog at 2.5.
Man, I got to have the Saints here. And lay that. I just don't. This is too. Something's up here, most definitely. But give me the Saints and lay the 2.5.
I'm gonna do it begrudgingly. But I like the 2.5 number more than 3, so I'll take the Saints as well. Buffalo hosts Kansas City, two teams that disappointed would be the right word in week one. Buffalo on the road, Kansas City at home. And this week it's Buffalo at home and Kansas City on the road. I don't like the game. I don't like it at all. I kind of want to like Kansas City, so I'll take 3 points and keep my fingers crossed.
I'm with you. I kind of want to like Kansas City. I think that's the best way to say it. But but when you're putting money down, you don't want to describe it that way. Not that, you know, not that we do that anyway, entertainment purposes only. But I kind of want to like Kansas City in this game myself, plus the 3.
All right, now this line's moved all over the place. This is the marquee 1 o'clock game, Philadelphia hosting Baltimore, two cities everybody in Pittsburgh loves to hate. In this sport, we hate Baltimore more. The Eagles, 2.5, Dave. I'm going to take Baltimore.
Man, something's up in this. Baltimore did such a good job stretching the field last week. I think the Eagles' defense is underrated. I mean, even though they played and made were going up against Whedon last week, and everybody said, well, that's a give me there. I think they're better than advertised. Anyway, you showing 2.5?
Yeah.
I think the Eagles win this on a late field goal, so give me the Eagles and lay it.
Okay. I'm counting up your wins from week one. Remember that you had 9. You had 9 in week one.
Okay.
Okay, the Eagles, okay. And the next game is Oakland at Miami. Oakland laying 2.5. Two more interesting teams. Miami's no good. Ryan Tannehill's no good. He shouldn't be playing yet. I'll take Oakland, and I'll lay the 2.5. On the road, coming east. It's not something I'd like to do, but we'll go with it.
Yeah, Ryan Tannehill, boy, so many tip passes in that game. Reggie Bush is about the only thing that they have going for them over there, and I think the Raiders will key on that. That being said, you know, it's a hard thing to go on the road that far that way and lay that 2.5, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to go against conventional wisdom here. Give me the Raiders minus 2.5.
Divisional game, AFC North, Cincinnati hosting Cleveland, laying 6.5. I think Cleveland's better than people give them credit for. I don't love this game either. But and I just, you know, I'm not, you know, it's against my DNA to bet on rookie QBs on the road. 7, I might give me pause to pass on it. I don't really want to take Cincinnati, but I'm gonna take the Bengals 6.5.
I want the Bengals too at home laying the 6.5. I mean, they're not as bad as what they were against the Ravens and Cleveland. They're gonna have to prove it to me with Whedon. So give me Cincinnati and lay the points.
Houston, Jacksonville. Houston laying 7. That's about 17 too few.
Absolutely 17 too few there. Houston's all over this. Boy, Foster, if Foster's not in there, it's Ben Tate. The tight end, Owen Daniels, looked good against Miami. AJ, a phenomenal catch against the Dolphins last week. Houston's just too much here. So, yeah, lay the 7 points here.
Dave, the next one's an interesting game. It's Dallas at Seattle, and the line's 3. I thought that might nudge a little higher. I'm rooting for Seattle this year. I really would like to see Seattle do well. I want to see Russell Wilson do well. But I think Dallas has too many weapons for him. And 3, even though I think it's 3 and 120, I'll take the Cowboys minus the 3.
I will as well. Seattle, I know everybody's excited about the young quarterback over there. But, you know, Marshawn Lynch is already starting to have these back spasms early on. It's Seattle's defense that makes them in all these games, especially their secondary. Seattle's secondary is probably one of the best in the league. Now, is it enough to shut down the juggernaut Ogletree? That being said, this is a feel. This has push actually written all over it in this game. But you know, I'll take Dallas and lay the three.
All right. The next one is Washington at St. Louis. Washington's laying three at St. Louis. Give me the Rams at home. RG3 had a great game, but he's a rookie quarterback. Let's see more.
I think you're going to see it, too. We'll differ on this, and I think RG3 gets the Redskins off to a 2-0 start and the Jeff Fisher era in St. Louis off to an 0-2 start. So give me the Redskins and lay. What are you showing, three?
Yes.
Yeah, lay the three here.
All right, Tennessee at San Diego, as we hit our 50-some minute mark here, we'll try and wrap this up. San Diego in September, been bad. They're flying under the radar. Nobody's talking about the Chargers. They're not seen as good a team as they have been in years past. So maybe this is the year they finally sneak up on people. I'll lay the six.
Oh, wow. Tennessee cannot get that running game going, and until they're able to get that running game going, I don't care how good Locker progresses. I'm gonna take this straight down to the quarterback battle here. Phillip Rivers right now, you know, is a better quarterback than Jake Locker. So give me San Diego and lay the, what'd you say, six?
Yep.
Lay the six.
San Francisco at home with Detroit, seven. I'd like to think. For this purpose, at this moment in time, I'm going to take 7 points, but I reserve the right with the man to change my opinion. But for the record here, I'll take Detroit.
You're going to take Detroit plus the seven on the road out west.
Yeah, Sunday night game too. They get smoked.
Detroit. I don't think it's going to be a smoke, but I think San Francisco covers on here. So give me San Francisco at home and lay the seven here. I see this being about an 8 or 9 point game, actually.
All right, Denver, Atlanta. Denver at home minus three. Atlanta at home minus three Monday night. God, I don't know what to do with this game because I think Atlanta's got a big home field advantage here. They look great in week one. You know I'm not a huge Matt Ryan fan, but I am a huge Julio Jones fan. I thought Denver did a really nice job, but I think the Steelers made them look maybe a tad better than they are. I'm going to lay three begrudgingly again, but this will be a fun game to watch.
Man, Peyton Manning, man, I tell you, it's just so hard with what he does, with the way he reads defenses, with the personnel that he has there. And I like what Atlanta does. Atlanta's going to win a lot of ball games this year. Atlanta might actually win this one by a point in this game. So I'm not going to say Denver wins this game, but you know what? Give me Denver plus the 3 points on the road.
All right, Dave, Steelers-Jets. The line has moved to 5.5. It's down a little bit. What do you think?
Everything what we said, I think Steelers are able to run the football early in this game. I think it opens up the passing game. I think they'll force Sanchez into a turnover or two. They might not get the pressure that they want in this game, but really, I like the Steelers to win this, and I'd like them to kind of win it kind of big too. So I'm going to say 31-17 Steelers.
You know what? I'm right with you. 28-13 Steelers. I don't think it's close. I think they grind out the fourth quarter and a big win for the Steelers. Dave, so what was the final score of the Seahawks Cardinals game last week?
It was close. Hold on a minute here. I think it was. Wasn't they going in for the win there?
Yeah, but did it end up three or not? It probably did because they didn't kick a field goal.
Yeah, they didn't. Hold on a minute. I'm pulling it up right now here.
All right, so you had nine, right?
Yeah, it was a 4-point game. Arizona won by four.
All right, so I think you have us both as plus three with the Cardinals and the Seahawks, so I didn't win either way. So you got nine right, I got five right. You kicked my butt. I got one back last night. So everybody listening, take that into account. Dave's up three here going into the weekend games. Dave, great show as always. You want to wrap things and I'll close us?
Yeah. Follow me on Twitter, @SteelersDepot. Follow David on Twitter. He's changed. Hey, go ahead.
Yeah, I need to get to 3,000 Twitter followers, folks. I mean, we just finally passed the Pirates account, slightly embarrassing, but David M. Todd, new handle on the account now that I'm getting paid, peanuts to do it, but I'm getting paid nonetheless. So good for me. So follow me there.
Yeah, at David M. Todd. So that's easy to do. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Our buddy Bob in Canada, we hear you, brother. We just ain't able to get to. You're a passionate dude, man. Keep firing them on, along with several others here. We like to get these emails from all over the world as well, too. You can
We do. If you're listening overseas, keep firing away. We need to put up a map with pins, Dave.
Yeah.
A map with pins. Get that up there.
Absolutely. Keep the donations rolling as well, too. We certainly do appreciate that. It buys me a cup of coffee. It buys David a couple of adult beverages there. So,
couple iron cities. Yeah, couple iron.
There you go. So you can do that by donating on the site via the PayPal button up the top right-hand corner there, or you can just go to PayPal and donate to the email address, admin@SteelersDepot.com.
But, yeah, I told you, it's going to be Jerry Lewis Telethon week. That might be next week. The Steelers win, we'll just go straight telethon.
Yeah. with your five wins last week,
I need some help.
I don't know how you did in your college games against the man, but we'll see. But anyway, David, you can wrap us up here.
All right. Well, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.